Hi, this is Bob, and today I have an interview with Vorbid. Vorbid is a progressive thrash metal band that was formed in 2013. This band has released A Swan by the Edge of Medalla, an album that from start to finish is one you'll be playing again and again. And here is my interview with Vorbid.
Hello, my friend.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Just waiting for Daniel to also join the call.
Excellent.
So where are you right now?
I'm in Massillon, Ohio.
Ohio, okay. So what time is it right now? Is it like 3 or?
Yes, it's a mid till 3.
Yeah. Here it's 8 o'clock and dark outside.
How is the weather there?
The weather is it's getting colder and it's pretty wet right now. The leaves are turning orange and, you know, the typical sort of autumn weather, I guess.
Yes, we're enjoying the same. It's a We have stayed in the 60s, but not much higher.
Yeah. I'm not so familiar with Fahrenheit, so I don't know what that translates to Celsius, but...
Hello.
Hello,
Daniel.
I can hear you. You can hear me. That's good.
Absolutely.
That's a start, at least.
It's a start.
I wanted to thank you both for taking time to speak with me today.
No problem. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
I wanted to ask you, how did the recording process go for this album?
How the process was pretty like we've always done it with, just that this time we went with another producer, but the process was pretty much the same. Do you mean like
did you have most of your material together?
Yeah, all of the material was together before we entered the studio, pretty much. I think maybe some lyrics had to be
lyrics that was some small portions of the lyrics, but other than that, and maybe a solo or two. But
the arrangements were there and the riffs, of course. So,
yeah.
I wanted to ask if you could speak on the song Paradigm.
Like lyrically or musically or?
Both. It's both. An amazing track.
Well, I can start. We probably have different versions of it. It's one of the early songs, or it was one of the last ones that we actually completed, but there were a lot of riffs on that song that's really old, and it started with the verse riff. We just jammed around on that, and
that's a long time ago, actually.
Yeah, that was kind of the start of it, and then Michael and Marcus, the drummer, had been jamming on the chorus and some other riffs, and we came up with a complete version about maybe 2 years ago, but we had some creative differences on it, so it was like a month before we went into the studio or something. We just added like changed 40% of the whole song.
It was like a bridge section that we had finished it, but none of us were really like proud of it or thought it was something, or we didn't thought it was special enough, or we didn't think it was good enough. So that was, as Daniel said, rewritten and finished right before we hit the studio.
And it was one of those songs that we really didn't know how it would turn out, because one of the things that makes that song stand out is the way the vocal harmonies on the verse. It just creates a different kind of sound than the rest of the album. And we didn't have a good idea of how we would do that before we went into the studio. So we didn't really know what kind of direction that song would take.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And it's also different in terms of it has, of course, some technical parts, but most of the riffs are, I feel like the main part of the song, or the first part of the song, is more like more groove oriented, which is something that we normally don't do, I think. Mm. If that makes sense. I don't know if you feel the same, Daniel.
Yeah, it's a different kind of a groove than we usually focus on, and it's probably it's the song that changed the most in the studio. Mm-hmm. Because
it's also like how the chorusing of the guitars and some clean guitars here and there, and as Daniel said, the vocals. So it quickly turned from being one of my I don't know about this song, to being like one of my favorite songs of the record. So that's cool, I guess.
Yeah, it went from being my least favorite to be the favorite.
Yeah, it's my favorite track as well. Nice. And another one of my favorites is Echotone.
Yeah. That was sort of like, we had pretty much finished the whole record, and we had a pretty good, the ending of the record was really strong, but we didn't have a big, an intro track. So I was like, okay, we need another song. So I basically wrote that in a couple of days. But it's mostly based off a lot of other riffs on the record. So it's not like an overture or something like that, but it's sort of in that way. Of course, with some new riffs here and there towards the end, but it was pretty much, oh shit, we need a new song. And then I just had a plethora of other songs to just take from to introduce the record. So I can't say that it's my song. It's me arranging from a lot of material that's already written, I guess.
I want to ask, as far as lyrics, what are your inspirations lyrically?
Well, it's kind of, with music, it's good to have inspirations, because we write music all the time and we're pretty adept at using inspirations as an inspiration and not a copying template. But as for writing lyrics, we don't really do that often. I don't sit around writing poetry all the time, so taking inspiration is harder. Because if I have something that I'm inspired by, then I end up just copying it. And so...
With lyrically or...?
Yeah, lyrically.
Yeah.
I listened to the only album I listened to throughout 2020 was Lamb Lies Down on Broadway by Genesis. Mm-hmm. And which got a very profound and large concept. And I wrote like 3 or 4 drafts for this concept album, and every one of them just turned out to be a copy of those. So I just have to scrap them. So I'm like subconsciously inspired by those kind of 70s prog, pretentious mind. Psychology concepts, but I don't know, as far as the story goes, it's not really inspired by anything. It's just the way it's phrased and told is really inspired by those albums.
I also feel like it's sort of how you think and felt probably at the time, just put into a story. That's kind of how I have seen it, as I've sort of read the lyrics more.
Yeah, definitely.
And I when we started the process of like, okay, we have a lot of songs, maybe we're going to turn this into a a concert record, I was pretty quick out of gate and was like, Daniel, you write the lyrics. You're the best lyricist. We need one guy to do everything so it's a cohesive piece of work and not just three guys making some sort of half-assed story. So that was kind of a nice thing for me to just not think of lyrics for this album.
Yeah, I think it's a very strong album, not only lyrically, but musically. It's very, very strong.
And we had like because at the end of 2018, we ended that year with a tour supporting the Mind record. And when we came into 2019, I think we were pretty exhausted after three, four years of pretty much hard working. And we were pretty young as well. So when we were like, okay, it's 2020 now, we feel inspired, let's go make write a new record, and then everything shuts down. So we had a long time making this record. I think that shows as well that we've had some more time with just about anything on the record.
Sure. Like
songs and arrangements and riffs and lyrics and vocals and
inspirations.
Yeah.
I also wanted to ask if you could speak on the album artwork and the artist that was involved.
Yeah, we had a lot of back and forth with different artists that we wanted to use. And we really didn't know what kind of motif we wanted.
Or style, I guess.
Or style, yeah. So we were kind of, we didn't have any idea. And even though we had the concept and the story, we wanted something like the Pink Floyd concept albums, or I wanted something like that, where you don't have a particular scene from the story or anything. You just have an abstract version of the themes. But that's kind of hard to imagine. And I think Michael as well did it. We just brosed on Instagram for different artists that wasn't that known or expensive, and
but that was but who was also a good painter. That was
of course,
one criteria.
or we would have made it ourselves. But I found this. I don't know if it was me or you, founder, but we found this.
I think it was you.
She's from Poland, but I think she lives in London or something, and she makes these great abstract they're abstract. It's an abstract style, but it's figurative as well, so it's not just lines and shit, it's detailed. So it was the exact thing that I wanted. Just I didn't know it until I saw her style. And
I think there was one painting that you sort of clicked on and was like, that's pretty cool. I want that kind of direction. I can't remember the name of it, though.
I think it was Bliss or something. She did a painting named, I think it was Bliss. And I just got inspired by that and just tried to put it into the story in my head and see if it would work. And it was the perfect painting. So we just said, can you make this kind of painting, but with these and these alterations and details, so it would fit the concept. And because we just loved her style. And so if anything, the inspiration for the artwork was her style.
Yeah.
And she was just a missing link for that album.
And we also felt that we needed an album cover that sort of stood out in terms of colors, because there's a lot of metal bands out there trying to be dark and mysterious and stuff like that. And we're more like, you know, it's a nice contrast to the music, because our music is pretty heavy sometimes, but it's also dynamic and all of that all together. So we just wanted an album cover that stood out from everything else, because it's a pretty bright album cover, like almost the same way as like Death used the pink colors on Leprosy. You know, it's sort of that thing that stands out from everything else that's around it in the record stores or whatever, you know. But I thought I think we had that kind of mentality as well. We wanted it to stand out.
Yeah, sure. we wanted it to be the album cover could be an art piece of itself. It could stand on itself, but it still had to have ties to the album, obviously.
Mm. Right. And I also wanted to ask, what can fans look for next?
I don't know.
We don't know what to look for next. I mean, like, we... It's so weird when you spend so much time working on a record and suddenly it's out and you feel, like, excited and also, like, pretty empty. And, like, okay, what do we do now? Like, I'm not sure when we're going to release new music. That's another story. But for now, we're just going to try and get out and promote the record and play more gigs and, you know, just start up after 2 years of pretty much no gigs, basically, and stuff like that.
I think the only thing that we know is it's not going to take 4 years for another album, unless COVID 2.0 happens or anything.
Or World War III, for that matter.
Yeah.
And speaking of the road, I wanted to ask you if you guys have any funny road stories you could share with me.
I have one that I think is pretty... Like, it's just so... Marcus, our drummer, is just like, he's a very goofy guy. And he's just the sweetest guy, and he's very kind and stuff. But, like, bad stuff happens to him all the time for some reason. And we were... That was when we toured with Obliteration and Art Noir through Europe. And we went to this gas station. And he had probably smoked some funny cigarettes or whatever, and drank a couple of beers, and we went to this gas station. And of course, being Norwegians, it's always cool to see gas stations who has beer and liquor and stuff. Mm. Of course, Marcus, he goes for a six pack of beer with only glass bottles, and of course he drops it in the middle of the gas station. Everybody looks around, and there comes this lady. I don't know if she was the manager or a janitor or something, but she yelled at him in some German language, and he was like, "What do I do now, guys?" And we were just standing there looking at him. That's probably the most rock and roll yet, I guess.
What about when he thought that the wardrobe was a toilet?
Hmm? I don't remember that.
It was Marcus, our drummer. He's the sweetest guy, but it was the first day of that road, that tour, and we were so green because we have never been on an actual tour, and
or a tour bus for that matter,
or a tour bus or anything. So we thought that, well, we gotta be totally shit faced every day. We can handle that, right? We got totally shit-faced. I think we tried to go through the whole bar, whatever. But the point is, I think he couldn't find the toilet, or he thought he was at the toilet.
No, I remember now. He asked he asked some of the guys in Obliteration or something, and he was like, "Where's the toilet?" I think the guitar player was like, "It's in there," just to... the kid with him, you know, and Marcus, of course, he believed. I think it was actually in the with the merch stand.
He pissed on the merch.
Not like on the merch, but just like in front of the merch stand.
Oh yeah.
I think some of the other guys looked at him and was like, "Fuck, man, you're the boss. You don't give a fuck."
Yeah. Thinking it was rock and roll, it was just shit faced out of his mind. But it was.
I like how he asked for tour stores, and we just throw Marcus under the bus.
Yeah,
when he's not even here. But I remember, were you there, Daniel, when we tried to it was on the same tour. We were at this hotel in Berlin, and I don't know if you were there, but it was me and Marcus, and we went to this hotel that the promoters had booked for us or something, so that we could shower and stuff like that. And me and Marcus come to this hotel, and the lady and the reception, she didn't speak English, and we were trying to book us into this room or check into this room, and she didn't understand English at all. Yeah, and then finally when she understand what we meant, she went in and opened the door, and there was Kalle, the vocalist Morgan, he was sleeping there. And then she got even more confused, and it was just like a weird situation.
It was getting lost in translation is pretty normal when you're on tour, but we were there for like a solid 2 hours trying to speak Norwegian and German and English and fucking Mandarin to her, and she just persisted on speaking German and asking us the same question in the same fucking language like 2 hours, and Marcus was he was our spokesperson for some reason.
Yeah, that was a great idea.
You do the talking, you know German.
In her defense, she tried really hard though to understand what went, and eventually she did, but she just got more confused because she didn't know that we shared the room with the other bands, you know.
Yeah. So not a lot of rock and roll stories and groupies and drugs and stuff, but some hotels and pissing in the wardrobe.
Pretty much Spinal Tap, I guess.
Yeah, more Spinal Tap than Guns N' Roses.
I also wanted to ask, how did you guys get together?
That's a good story, I guess. I was pretty young when I started the band. I was probably like 14 or something. And I played drums in a couple of bands, and primarily being a guitar player, I wanted to play guitar, but none of the bands in the local area played like thrash metal, which was what I was pretty much into at that age. But then I met Marcus, and we went to like ground school together, like first and second and third and fourth grade. But then he moved away, so I didn't see him after some years. And then when I found out that he was into the same music as I was, and he played drums, that was like the perfect pairing.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked if he would start a band with me, and he said yes. And then I got two other guys I knew to play guitar and bass, and that was pretty much the beginning. But after the first 6 months or so, like, me and Marcus just found out that the other two guys didn't cut the chase, they didn't do the job, so we got rid of those guys, and then Daniel joined, and we met actually in another band, me and Daniel.
Yeah, because I played bass in the first band that I've ever played, and Michael played drums, so I just thought that you were a very gifted like 10-year-old drummer, but one day we walked down to the bus, and you told me about this band that you had, and I didn't really hear anything more about it until you called me a couple of months after. And
I think that was after we kind of found out that we both like Megadeth and
We had kind of poo-pooed that old band by then. And you called me and asked to be in the band. And that's it.
Do you remember what song we auditioned you with?
Yeah, it was Inner Self by Sepultura.
Yeah.
Or Sepultura, as I thought.
That was pretty much the beginning. Like by 2014, that was when the core of the band was there. So me and Marcus was like 15 and you were 19, I guess?
I was like 46 and you were 10. It felt like that. Yeah, I've always had this complex about being in bands with people younger than me. It feels, But it was, I was doubting it at first, because you sent me the only recording of your band that you sent me, or you had, was kind of a competition thing that was being filmed, and you played...
Yeah, that's right.
You played one of your own songs.
Which was not good at all.
No, this was like 2014 or something, and you were at that time a great guitarist, but they had mixed you like Jason Newsted on and Justice for All. They just because they were mad at you for some reason, so I couldn't hear your guitar, and the other guitarist was not that great.
So it was louder in me in the mix.
It sounded really bad, but the only reason I joined was because, of course, I liked you as a person, and you were playing in standard tuning. Those were the two factors that made me stay pretty much.
And we had a interest in Megadeth, which I had never met anyone else other than Marcus, of course, who liked Megadeth in our town, basically, because at 2013, 2014, everybody was pretty much into like metalcore and those kind of bands, and I fucking hated that shit. I was like, this ain't for me. Like, I'm not saying that music is not real music, but it just didn't speak to me as a 13-year-old who liked, you know, fast stuff and solos and yeah.
You gotta speak for yourself, because I hadn't really met anyone who listened to music. It was all football and motorcycles in my gangs. So yeah. I was really happy to meet someone that played metal.
And I wanted to ask you each, along your musical journey, for each of you, what was the best advice that you've been given along your way?
That's tough, actually. I do remember, this is pretty early in the band's history. It was pretty much like before we recorded our first EP. And there was this guy called Kjetil Norhus, who's a singer of Green Carnation. And we had like a meeting with him, because he used to work at this like an organization to help like younger musicians to like get smarter at like the business and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I remember he told us like the mentality you have to have as a band today is you have to wake up every day and think, what can I do for my band today? Like, what can I do to get my band forward and promoted and you know, get money and stuff like that. He said that you have to have that mentality, and that really stuck with me. Like, man, if we're gonna go somewhere, we gotta have to, you know, fucking work our asses off, even though we're 17 and can't buy beer and stuff like that. So that stuck with me, and that was pretty early.
Yeah, that was some good advice. Remember that. I can't come up with anything better.
But you have an uncle, and you had a pretty good guitar teacher who had certainly given you an advice or two throughout the years, I guess.
Yeah, but it was more like the instrumental advice. My guitar teacher told me that if you're just going to be going around playing solos, no one's going to hire you. And I can say that was pretty good advice. And
absolutely.
When I teach students myself, I always tell them that. And timing and chord knowledge and technique is the most important stuff you can learn. But I can't really say that it was advice that stuck with me, because I really didn't really follow it at all. And I followed it eventually, but it took me like 7 years.
I wanted to ask you guys, how's the music scene in your area?
I've moved to Oslo since like 2020. I moved to Oslo, so here is a pretty good music scene. I mean, like, everybody who's working in the industry is pretty much based around here.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a plethora of a lot of different, you know, like clubs and scenes that have a lot of cool different bands. So I can just walk around and suddenly be at like a jazz jam, or being at like a rave, or going to death metal show, you know. So the music scene in Oslo is pretty alive and well, and I guess that's how it is in Norway, when every other city other than Oslo, Bergen, and Trondheim is just like a small little town, but of course you have some smaller cities with great history, you know, musically. But in Oslo, it's pretty good.
I think it depends a lot on what's hip, because 10 years ago, the core thing was hip, and there was a plethora of bands blossoming in Arendal. But I still think that there's a lot of thrash bands and stuff around, but they might not just they might not start a band or get out there because it's not hip enough. I don't know. I just feel like there's more bands out there than you would think or you'd see at a show. I see more and more young people wearing battle vests and stuff like that, and it's like there's got to be more bands out there. They're just not formed yet or something like that. So I hope for some kind of renaissance soon.
Speaking of Arendal, right?
Yeah. Arendal, small southern city, or not that small, but yeah.
Which is where we're from, basically.
It's just really dry compared to
10 years ago.
Yeah, it's like us and one other band.
I also wanted to ask you guys, what's the best way to get merchandise?
From us?
Yes.
Well, for the new record, so far we have CDs and shirts and vinyl. The shirts you can only get from us, so that you have to DM us or email us to get that.
And that is the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Email us or DM us.
Yeah. And you can, of course, order CDs from us if you want to that. And vinyls are coming. We get vinyls in the start of December, I think. So you can order black vinyl directly from our label. Or if you want to order a special edition, which is red vinyl, you can order that directly from us, and you can only get that from us as well. So just contact us, basically.
The label doesn't get the vinyl any sooner than us, though. It's just that you can pre-order.
Mm.
And lastly, I wanted to ask you guys, if you could give a message to your fans, what would that message be?
To our
fans.
To your fans.
To your fans. I just want to thank everybody for sticking with us for the next year. We have our 10th year anniversary, and there are some people who stuck with us since the beginning, and everybody who has come and gone and just supported Vorbid in some way over the last 10 years. I just want to thank them all. Like, we wouldn't be here unless we had people who said Vorbid is a pretty good band. You should check that out. You know.
Yeah, me too. Just anyone who listens to anything we've ever done, just thank you for the support, and everything helps immensely.
Mm.
And I wanted to thank you guys for taking time to speak with me today. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you.
No problem. That was a pleasure. It's always good to talk to somebody, you know.
Yeah, thank you.
And I hope you guys have a great rest of your night.
Thank you. And you have a great rest of your
day.
I guess it's afternoon, I guess.
Yes, early afternoon for me.
Yeah. Maybe we'll speak soon again.
Absolutely.
Sometime. Yeah.
All right. You guys take care and have a great rest of your night.
You too.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
I'd like to thank you for listening to today's podcast. You can sponsor the podcast. Just click that button and you can be a member of the family. And remember, come see me for a fix.